This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And we're back on Inside Black and Gold. I'm Jeff Nowak. As always, subscribe. If you haven't subscribed yet, please do that. It really helps us out. We're trying to grow this, continue to grow this into year three. You know, we've had some fits and starts. I've had to take a lot of trips. I'm going to have to head back to Connecticut. It's a long story, but I'll try to keep the schedule from getting disrupted the way it has over the last month. We've only posted like four episodes since the turn of February, something like that. So I'm going to try to get a little more regular, especially as we get down toward the draft. We will get a mock draft here at some point, I promise. It's going to happen. Mock draft 3.0. It's been percolating. And we'll need to get back. But this segment, I want to talk about, okay, what's left to do in free agency? Like I said, there's only four signings. Xander Horvath, Adam Prentice, Willie Gay, Nathan Peter, and not exactly any show-stopping names there. And then you have a few players who were interesting, right? You got Andres Pete. The Saints allowed Andres Pete to get to free agency, which means that they're going to eat that dead cap hit when they didn't necessarily have to. And I think that's telling, because if you were really motivated to bring Andres Pete back, and you could have done it before him becoming a free agent with an extension, you would have, because then you could have pushed that cap hit down the road. It doesn't mean they're not going to bring Andres Pete back, but they're not going to be able to take advantage of that cap savings this year had they extended him prior to the start of the new league year. And that could happen for a couple reasons. One, it could have been Andres saying, hey, this is the perfect time for me to reach free agency. I just had one of my healthiest seasons. I had one of my most productive seasons since, you know, the Pro Bowl years at guard, which you're pretty far removed from that. And in that season, not only did I prove I could play guard and stay healthy, I showed him I could play left tackle too. So now you have a guy who can go on the free market and say, hey, you guys need a swing tackle? What are you going to pay? And I guarantee you that there's going to be a market for Andres that is above what the Saints wanted to pay. And so it'll come down to, okay, what are the Saints willing to pay Andres Pete, and is it worth it? I think the only way he comes back is if the market doesn't develop the way he thinks it will, and I think it will. So I would be surprised if Andres comes back. And if the Saints do re-sign Andres, you knew about it now, you'll be paying him a contract, and you'll still be eating the dead cap hit from his contract, which it's already factored in, so it's not like you're going to add dead money. You know, when they were clearing that $87 million or whatever, it was against that. So that's still there. They've already factored it in. But I do think that it is telling. Now, there are a few other guys. Now, Ike Yadam, he's visiting the Commanders this week. And I've seen a few people say, like, if the Saints let Ike Yadam go, if the Saints let Ike Yadam sign elsewhere, it's a sign that they plan to bring back Marshon Lattimore. And I really don't think it's that at all. I think it's that, and this is what I've been saying since, like, week five, since he filled in for Paulson Adebo and was incredible as a man cover corner and had all these pass breakups and was not a weak link in that defense at all. There's going to be teams that look at that and say, yeah, we need that. That's what we need in our defense. And the Saints, who paid this man on a one-year, $1 million contract last year, even if they move on from Marshon Lattimore, you're probably doing so you can start Alante Taylor on the outside. So how much are you going to be able to pay your CB3? I think that's going to be tough. If he gets a contract in the range of $5, $6 million annually, you're not keeping him. And so I think, again, you know, this could be a similar situation to Andres Pete. Like, even if the Saints do try to re-sign him, do want to re-sign him, Ike would be crazy to not at least get to the open market and see what other teams have to offer. Right? So I don't think it has anything to do with a Marshon trade. I think it's just Ike has played himself into a valuable free agent, and it's at the Saints aren't going to be able to match it. So I really would caution you against drawing a direct line. And that's something that drives me nuts. There isn't always an obvious direct line to be drawn from this to that. Sometimes things are disconnected. And I think that is the case here. Like, you could very much bring back Ike and keep Marshawn. You could very much trade Ike. I'm sorry. You could very much not re-sign Ike and bring someone else in, maybe draft a guy, and still trade Marshawn. So, I just don't think there's a direct line to be drawn there. That said, I do think that the Saints bringing in Avante Maddox for a free agent visit, former Eagles cornerback, slot cornerback, I think that is somewhat indicative of where the Saints view themselves at the cornerback position, and that is we do not have a tried and true slot cornerback, and we want one. You know, and so whether that's Avante, whether that's someone in the draft, whether that's another free agent, you know, a guy that I really liked was Kenny Moore. He re-signed with the Colts, and I don't think they were ever going to pay him what they would have needed to pay him. You know, there's slot corner options out there, and I just think if you were dedicated to Alante Taylor in the slot, you wouldn't be looking at slot corners. And again, that's not necessarily a sign that Marshawn's getting traded either, but if you did trade Marshawn, you 100% would need a slot corner. So I do think this is the Saints at minimum covering their bases for that eventuality. So Avante Maddox is a guy that is interesting. And I think for him, it's going to come down to do the medicals check out, because he has missed a good chunk of games over the last two seasons. He's been effective, but he hasn't been available. And so are those injuries predictive? Like we talked about with Marshawn Lattimore, you know, a lacerated spleen and a high ankle sprain. You know, these are just bad luck injuries. They're not anything that you look at and say, wow, he just can't stay healthy. With Avante, it may be a different question, but you really won't be able to get a good determination until you get him in and you let your doctors take a look at him. And so I think that's kind of where you're at with him. Now, the next guy we'll talk about, Chase Young. He's reportedly going to visit the Saints on Friday. He also visited the Panthers, left without a deal, and they have since agreed to terms on a contract with DJ Wonnum, who, you know, is probably in that same market. I don't think you're necessarily going to sign two guys in that range for in free agency at defensive end. So, you know, if no market really develops for Chase Young, I think that's the recipe for the Saints to end up with Chase Young. And we're going to talk a little bit more about the approach they've been taking in a second here. But man, if you can get Chase Young on like a 1-year prove it deal, kind of like Willie Gay, right? Like, I think you're probably going to have to pay a little bit more than the deal you gave Willie Gay, just because of the positional value, and defensive ends will typically make more than a linebacker. So maybe 1 year, max $8 million, something like that, where he can kind of rebuild his value. Because I don't know if he necessarily did it with San Francisco, right? What he did last year is prove he could stay healthy. And that's not for nothing. That is important. This is a guy who has struggled with health his entire career. But I don't think that he made the impact, even though the 49ers got to the Super Bowl and he was obviously an important part of that defense getting to the Super Bowl. You can't hold that against him. I don't think he made the impact in that defense that they probably hoped he would when they gave up a third-round pick to get him. Because if he did, he'd still be there, right? What exactly is indicative of the fact that they tried to bring him back when, you know, the Saints are looking at him and the Saints aren't going to give anyone more than the minimum they could possibly get away with? So I don't know. I think you're in an interesting space there. But so again, what are the needs for this team, right? You need to do something on the offensive line. And I don't think you necessarily need to sign a starter, but you need to identify a starter. You need to have a plan for who's going to start at left tackle. You need to have depth at guard. Now, you still have James Hurst. You didn't do anything with James Hurst's contract, so he'll be around next year. Is he a starting guard? I think he is a very good replacement-level player. I think he's a very valuable guy to have as a swing tackle who can come in and play multiple positions. But I don't think he's a starting caliber anything in the NFL. I think he's a backup. And so if you're starting him at guard, that means you are starting a player that you already had a talent deficit in that position. So I would rather improve there. Maybe you draft a guy. Maybe 45 is where you go get one of the top-rated interior linemen and you try to upgrade there. Left tackle, if you don't bring Andres Pipak, that means you're really riding with Trevor Penning and you're hoping that he can do the job, unless you take someone at 14. But again, that's a rookie. You don't know what that's going to be. At least you feel a little bit about Ryan Ramczyk and the fact that he'll play next year. But again, we don't know where he's at. So you've got to do something at offensive line. And I don't know exactly what that's going to be, but I do think you're going to make a move. You're going to bring in a free agent. Slot corner, like we talked about, whether it's Avante Maddox or somebody else, yes, I do think you're bringing someone in there. And pass rusher, I think you do need to bring someone in. So those are the three next positions that I think you're going to sign somebody at. I also think you're looking at it and you're saying, we need a wide receiver. We need another body in that room, because even if you draft a guy, which I think you probably will, you need at least one more body. You have three guys under contract right now, and they're three good guys. They're three players you like. You have Chris Olave, Rashid Shaheed, and A.T. Perry. Three guys you like, three guys who are on pretty sweetheart contracts when you look at the wide receiver market right now. But I think you need at least one more veteran player, and a guy like Hunter Renfrow could make sense. That said, he's not going to be that contested catch guy that you probably need. So I kind of look at it and say, yeah, you probably bring in somebody else. Hunter Renfrow is a guy who knows Derek Carr. He's a guy who knows Nathan Peterman. Like, when he posted his thank you note to the Raiders, it was a picture of Derek Carr, Darren Waller, and Hunter Renfrow celebrating a touchdown. So I think, you know, again, it's like, okay, does he have a market? Does he get offered a contract from somewhere else? It just doesn't make sense to match. If you can get him on a vet minimum deal, there's no question you bring him in and see what happens, right? Same situation you brought in Bryan Edwards last year, right? Like, it's just a guy, it's a body. And if he plays well enough, yeah, he gets a role. If not, move on. But I would be disappointed if they don't bring in Hunter Renfrow, if he's available and you're not paying anything significant. I think it would be foolish to not at least see how that situation develops and add another veteran body into that wide receiver room. So we'll see what happens there. But he's not going to be that blocking wide receiver that you need. So we'll find out. Now, I do want to kind of hit before we go here. I know you've been on here for a while. I do want to hit. So what should we make of the Saints offseason strategy to this point? And the funny thing is, and the reason that I get a kick out of all of these salary cap conversations is that they ignore the fact that this team has actually, over the last couple of years, the Derek Carr contract notwithstanding, been pretty reasonably cautious with some of the contracts it's doled out. Now, you need a quarterback. You're not getting anywhere without a quarterback. So they tried to make it Deshaun Watson. Like, they indicated pretty early on, it's like, we're going to go and find a quarterback and pay him something, and then we're going to try to build things around him and continue to try to put a team on the field that is capable of winning, right? That's what the Saints believe in. That is always what they're going to try to do. This is never going to be a team that gives up on the idea of fielding a competitive roster, winning as many games as possible, trying to qualify for the postseason, and seeing what happens from there. People talk about last season like it was a disgrace to the game of football. They went 9-8 and missed the playoffs on a tiebreaker. Was it perfect? Absolutely not. Was it terrible? Absolutely not. Was it fun? Absolutely not. Like, all of those things can be true. But the idea that they're so far off that this is not something that can be sustained is silly. It's nonsense. And you're getting told that by Falcons fans who have watched this team lose seven or more games every year since the start of 2018. What's the logic there? Right? So I think that it's funny because they get framed as a team that is irresponsible and they're kicking the can and they're not paying attention to the long-term ramifications. Oh, they're going to have They already have $60 million over the cap next year. It's like, yeah, but they had $87 million over the cap this year. So if they don't add any more to that burden, then they're $27 million ahead of where they were this year. Right? And at the end of the day, that's the plan. That's the long-term plan. It's not to tear everything down in one fell swoop. It is to chip away year after year until you get to a point where, rather than nine restructures, you only have to do one or two, and you're right there. And then you have a lot of ability when you do get to the point that you feel like we're right there. We're on the cusp of being a Super Bowl contender. When you have kind of straightened out the books, then you can really take a big swing. You know what I mean? Like, it's not about tearing everything down now. It's about being smart about it and being ready for when you do feel like you are a legit Super Bowl contender and you can start to push a lot of these contracts forward so you can sign a big name, so you can bring in one of these top-end free agents in a year where you do go into it genuinely saying Super Bowl or bust. You got to get there, And that's the difficult part, is getting there throughout this process. But again, it's a process. It is not a one-year thing like the Chargers tried to do. And then they find themselves in this situation where they have to cut Mike Williams just to maybe sign Mike Williams. So that's where I am. And so, you know, I think Nick Underhill put out a good kind of analysis of this. And the word he used to describe it is measured. Another word I would use to describe it is calculated. You know, and maybe that's just because I play Rocket League. And whenever you do something good, there's a quick chat thing that says calculated. And sometimes people are sarcastic because you screwed up and they're like, oh, that was very calculated. Anyway, calculated, like there's a plan. There's always a plan. And when you make moves, it has to fit within that plan. And what the Saints are trying to do is they're trying to thread a needle where you, again, walk down those cap overages and still field a competitive team, which to this point they have proven is possible. Now, how competitive can you be? That remains to be seen. But when you go 9-8 and miss the playoffs on a tiebreaker, you cannot say that this team is not competitive and capable of making the postseason. And at the end of the day, being competitive and making the postseason has to be the baseline goal for every NFL franchise. Only one team wins the Super Bowl every year. If making the playoffs is not an acceptable outcome for a season, then what's the point? Dissolve the league and say, okay, unless you're the Chiefs or the 49ers, why bother? Let's have them play a 16-game series. It's silly. So I don't know. Like, you look at this and you say, okay, are they being irresponsible? Absolutely not. They're being annoyingly responsible. They have given out four contracts. Two of them are fullbacks. One is a backup quarterback who won't make the roster. And the other is a one-year contract for a depth linebacker. I don't think there's anything less responsible than that. And you're going to see them continue to do that, continue to bargain bin shop and add pieces where it makes sense and go from there. But that's what you have. You have a team that has shown you its hand, and they believe they have, I don't know, what's, you know, two pairs, right? You're not going to win every hand with two pairs, but you're not going to fold two pairs. It depends what those pairs are. Are they kings and aces? Then you feel pretty good about your two pairs. Are they twos and threes? Maybe not. All right? And hey, you still got the river. Maybe you score a flush, right? Like, that's where you're at. And it's a bad analogy, but I do think that's kind of where you're at with it. You're not going all in because that would be irresponsible. But you're also not tearing everything down to the studs when you feel like this is a team that can go out and win the division. And, you know, and I've seen people say this, and it's true. One of the only downsides to managing the cap the way the Saints do is, and I take that back, it's not the only downside, but one of the most significant downsides to managing the cap the way the Saints do is that the team owner has to cut checks early and cut more checks and be on the hook for more money than they probably would need to if you manage the cap the way the Bills do, right? And so as long as Gale's on board, there's no reason not to do it, right? And beyond that, it's like, yeah, okay, we're attached to veteran players, but are they veterans you don't want? Because if the answer is no, then what's the problem? Tyrann Mathieu, are you desperate to improve on Tyrann Mathieu on your roster? Are you desperate to improve on DeMario Davis on your roster? Or are you going to keep him anyway? And in that case, what are we complaining about? Right, you moved on from Michael Thomas and Jameis Winston. This didn't prevent you from doing that. You can move on from Andres Pete if you don't like Andres Pete. This didn't prevent you from doing that. Next year, if you can't play Ryan Ramczyk, this won't prevent you from doing that. So at the end of the day, that's what you have, is you have a team that is being responsible in the only way it knows how, and that is by continuing to try to field a competitive roster. And all this is to say, Chase Young, if you love Chase Young, the Saints would love to bring in Chase Young at their price. Avante Maddox, if you love Avante Maddox, the Saints would love to bring in Avante Maddox. Maybe, I don't know. But at their price, that's what I do know. And that's going to continue to be the cycle. And when you talk about an Ike Adam, yeah, I'm sure there is a number that they would bring back Ike Adam at. But that's the number they're going to bring back Ike Adam at. Not your number, their number. And that's responsibility and how the Saints view it. And that's going to continue to be the case. again, until you feel like you are on the cusp of a Super Bowl. And at that point, you will have hopefully balanced your books down to a level that you have another trigger to be like, no, we're going for it now. And is Derek Carr going to be the quarterback that ever gets you to that point? I don't know. Probably not. Let's be real. I mean, he's in his mid-30s, whatever. But the hilarious thing to me is everyone telling me that Kirk Cousins definitely is that guy, the 36-year-old coming off of a torn Achilles, or at least he'll be 36 by the start of next season. That's the guy. Everyone's telling me that that's a great move and that the Derek Carr move was a stupid move. The Saints should never done it. They are the same contract. Whatever you want to deal with on the back end, that is the same move. That is the same gamble. Both teams did it. So don't tell me one is different than the other. Don't tell me that Kirk Cousins is somehow a winner. People tell me, oh, he's a winner. That's why it's different, because Kirk Cousins is a winner. The dude has like a 78-70 career record. Like, yeah, Derek Carr doesn't have a great career record either, but neither does Kirk Cousins. This guy's 1-4 in the playoffs. I think Saints fans may have a skewed image of that because of the one win happened to be in the Superdome against Drew Brees in the overtime that actually, if it happened today, if it happened in 2024, the Saints would have gotten the ball and a chance to go tie the game. Saints would have gotten the ball and a chance to win on a touchdown and maybe a two-point conversion or whatever, like how you do it. In that year, a touchdown on the first drive of overtime won it, and it happened to be on a Kyle Rudolph push-off that you will never convince me was anything but a push-off. So don't tell me that the Kirk Cousins deal is somehow a home run contract and that the Derek Carr one is a garbage contract. The Saints were stupid to sign it. At least be consistent is what I ask from you. And I do think the Saints, at the very least, this season and last season for the most part outside of Derek Carr, have been consistent in how they're doing this and how they're walking things back in a reasonable fashion. But we'll see. All this said, maybe they go out tomorrow and drop on somebody that wasn't expecting. It can't be a massive bag, but it can be a medium-sized bag. and we'll see. But all right, who dat? This is Inside Black and Gold. I am Jeff Nowak. Thanks, everyone, for listening. The next episode will probably be coming to you from an undisclosed location in my – actually, it will be a disclosed location because it'll probably be another episode from my parents' kitchen because that's where I will be. But we'll do it. We'll get it done, and we'll see what the Saints roster looks like at that point. But again, thanks everyone for listening. Follow me on Twitter at Jeff_Nowak. Subscribe if you haven't yet. If you're watching this on YouTube, ring the bell at WWL Sports. We get ticking up closer to 10,000 subscribers. Hoping to get there prior to the draft. I think we can do it. I think we can do it, guys. But all right, who dat? Go Saints. Peace out.